This is America Weekend. I'm Mike Bennett. In a moment, we'll be talking with a guy who got his nickname from the boss, Bruce Springsteen. Southside Johnny from the Asbury Jukes will join us in a bit to talk about his summer tour. But first, Donald Trump officially announces this week he's running for president. Real estate mogul and TV reality star Donald Trump launched his presidential campaign Tuesday, telling a crowd during a 45-minute speech, quote, "I am officially running for president of the United States, and we are going to make our country great again." The speech hit on Trump's signature issue, like currency manipulation from China, while also taking shots at the president and his Republican rivals, too. At the end of his speech, Trump said, "Sadly, the American dream is dead. But if I get elected president, I will bring it back bigger and better and stronger than ever before." Meanwhile, the Apprentice reality show will be put on ice during Donald Trump's presidential run. Sources connected with Trump say the show's 15th season will not air because the networks cannot give one candidate more airtime than another one. Insiders say no one will take Trump's place on the show, so it's simply going off the air until his campaign runs its course. Here are some of the top 10 things that Trump said in his 2016 presidential campaign speech. Donald Trump 2016 is officially a thing. The real estate mogul and reality TV star is officially running for president of the United States, and he says, "I'll be the greatest jobs president that God ever created." Here are nine more truly Trump things he said in his speech. "Even our nuclear arsenal doesn't work. I thought it was horrible when the fact was broadcast on television because, boy, that sends signals to Putin that America is a nation that truly has no clue." On Obamacare, "If you have to get hit by a tractor, literally a tractor to use it because the deductibles are so high." On what he says was $5 billion spent making the Obamacare website, "I have so many websites, I have them all over the place. I hire people, it costs me $3. Trump also said, "We don't have victories anymore. I beat China all the time." Trump said, "Politicians are all talk, no action. Politicians will not bring us to the promised land." On China, Trump said, "They're building a military island in the middle of the South China Sea. Now, our country could never do that because we have to get environmental clearance. You have a problem with ISIS. You have a bigger problem with China." Saudi Arabia, Trump says, "They make $1 billion a day. I love the Saudis. Many are in this building," referring to Trump Towers in New York City. "Whenever they have problems, we send over the ships. What are we doing? They have nothing but money. Saudi Arabia, without us, is gone." Trump also said that somebody said to me the other day, a reporter, "But Mr. Trump, you're not a nice person. How can you get people to vote for you?" I said, "I don't know. I said, number one, I am a nice person. I think I'm actually a very nice person. But I said, this is going to be an election that's based on competence." And finally, Trump said, "Some people say, well, Donald, you'll never run. And one of the main reasons is that you're private and you're probably not as successful as everybody thinks. So a large accounting firm has been working for months and they've put together a financial statement. I have assets, big accounting firm, $9,240,000,000, and I have liabilities of about $500 million. So I have a net total worth of over $8.7 billion. I'm not doing that to brag. I'm doing it to say that's the kind of thinking our country needs." Being a teenager in the 1990s meant you were the last generation to experience a world without ever-present technology. A new Reddit features 90s children recalling the habits that younger people no longer do, like calling someone's house and having to ask their parents if they can talk, making plans without the luxury of sending a text to cancel or tell someone you're running late, getting someone to tell you the directions and writing them down before you go somewhere, searching for change to make a phone call, or sitting by the radio hoping the radio plays your favorite songs to record it on a cassette tape. New Jersey native Southside Johnny and his group, the Asbury Jukes, playing all over the United States this summer.
I mean, you know, after all these years of making music, we're working on a new album. So, and I thought, God, do I want to make another album? And then once the process started, you know, writing and trying to figure out where we're going, it got good. You have to keep looking forward. I mean, you've got dates coming up and music to make. It's no use looking back. I mean, that's already done. There'll be plenty of time for that later.
Tell us about the Southside Johnny show. I'm sure this is pretty much an up-tempo dancing in the aisles kind of an event, right?
Yes, it is. We try to have fun on stage, and we invite everybody in the audience to have fun along with us. I mean, it's a band that really enjoys playing, so, you know, we're not trying to be anybody special. We're not trying to prove anything, just trying to have a good time and make some music. And I think that's the key thing. We don't try to go through the songs. We invent things every night and find different ways to do things. And we have a great time. I mean, I have a great band right now, and they all are getting along. Nobody's trying to kill anybody, which is good. And, you know, it's just fun to get on stage with them.
Southside Johnny, you as the front man stays the same, but I'm sure there's been plenty of changes with the Asbury Jukes over the years, right?
Yeah, there's been over 130 people have gone through this band.
Is that right?
Yeah. There's a guy a few years ago, it's been like 6 or 8 years, he made a family tree and showed all the different people that have been in the Jukes for the last 35, 40 years. And they don't, it was the total was more than 130, and we've had more since then, too.
You probably don't even remember half of them.
I see names on that list, but I don't know. I don't remember them. But, you know, I mean, when you keep a band that long, especially a horn band that's on the road, horn players tend to come and go because they get, like John Isley, who's a tremendous player with us now, he is also in Diana Ross's band, and she's out. And, of course, that pays more than I do, but she's not even I do. So, you know, when he gives us a great sub that he does, and he goes out and plays with them. That's kind of the thing. Everybody knows that if they get a gig that pays more money or they need to do, they can certainly do that as long as there's somebody to take their place.
Yeah, now you went to Neptune High School with a couple of guys who also became pretty big musicians, right?
Well, I went with Gary Talent, yeah. He was at Neptune High School. Steve Van Zandt went to Middletown High School, so he didn't actually go there.
And did you know at an early age, you guys, that... When you were
Gary did. Gary and Bruce and Steven, they all knew they were going to be musicians at 16, 17. Gary knew even before that. He was in bands when he was 12 and 13 years old. And when I met him, he came up from Tennessee. I said, hey, you know, what are you going to do? He says, I'm going to be a musician. And I guess he was 15, 16 years old. And I had just started playing in bands and singing in bands, and I wasn't taking it that seriously because, you know, I really didn't think of myself that way. But he was so adamant about it, and then I got Steven, and then Bruce, and a bunch of other people, and they all said, we're musicians. I said, yeah, I am too. To heck with it, you know? There wasn't really anything else I wanted to do, and it kept me out off the streets and out of trouble, in all honesty.
You just naturally became a singer, or you always had some ability, or how did that work?
I used to listen to a lot of records and a lot of radio back when they played a lot of R&B and everything like that. My parents liked... a lot of rhythm and blues and blues. And I always could remember lyrics. I'm not so good at it anymore. But I had a facility for remembering lyrics. And if you're the only guy that knows lyrics to Louie Louie, you get a gig. Everybody wanted to be a guitar hero back then, and nobody wanted to sing. And so I said, I will.
And you're still singing this many years later. Do you still have the vocal chops?
Yeah, I've been very blessed with that. My voice has been strong all through the years. I've had a couple of years when it's been rough. And it's, you know, give it out occasionally, but in the last 10 years, I haven't had any incidents at all, so everything's been good. I don't know why. I mean, it's not like I take better care of myself than anybody else. It's just genetic, I guess.
Give everybody an idea of what the presentation is like.
Well, we got a whole rhythm section, and we've got three horns, and on stage, we just fire away. Every night is different. I mean, I make a set list and they laugh, and we sometimes don't even get on stage and do the first song on the set list. You know, if you're feeling the audience a different way, you just call out another song and we take it from there. But it's fun. I mean, we have a great time. The guys are really great players, a lot of great soloists, and, you know, and then I'm up there and I tell a few jokes and some stories and they occasionally let me sing.
And the New Jersey sound, how would you describe it?
I don't know if there is really a Jersey sound. I mean, we're all very different in our approach to how we do things, except for working hard on stage and the kind of blue-collar feel. You know, there's no intellectual elitism to most of our music. It's not like we're dumb or anything. It's just we know that it's more of a visceral approach to emotion and music, and that's what we liked when we were young, rock and roll and rhythm and blues and soul and, you know, I mean, we just want to get out there and move people and move ourselves.
And where did you come up with the nickname Southside?
I didn't, actually. Bruce gave me that name. He had a band he had come back broke from the West Coast visiting his mom, I guess it was, and a guy offered him three gigs and offered him some money because they had kind of a reputation. And he didn't have a band, so he put together this band, Dr. Zoom and the Sonic Boom, and it just kept growing and growing. And he asked me to join it. He said, everybody has to have a nickname. And Bruce was Dr. Zoom, and Steven became Miami Steve. And I became Southside Johnny, and it just stuck. It wasn't anything I didn't have anything to do with it, other than I got stuck with it. But it's, I like it. It's okay.
Oh, it's certainly stuck, right? I mean, it's what everybody identifies you as.
Yeah, it's because I like Southside of Chicago blues, the electric blues, Muddy Waters, Little Walter, you know, all that kind of thing.
Safe travels, and we'll see you in Peekskill.
Okay, Mike, thanks a lot.
With Southside Johnny, I'm Mike Bennett, and you're listening to America Weekend on the Envision Radio Network.
America Weekend.
Big success in a minute with George and Mary Lynn.
What's the simplest way to get more done every day? Block and tackle.
First, block out chunks of time to tackle your most important tasks.
For example, reserve the first couple of hours every day for project work.
Of course, you'll bend your schedule to deal with urgent issues.
But most days, you'll start by diving into work that's critical to your big success.
Second, block together less important tasks and tackle them as a group at a set time.
For instance, set aside the first hour after lunch to catch up email and make phone calls.
It takes less time to do these routine tasks all at once rather than one at a time.
Block and tackle your way through your day. It leads to big success.
Find big success at BIGGSuccess.com.
Do you have troubled skin or acne? With Proactive Plus, your acne can heal and you can help prevent new breakouts from happening. Call Proactive Plus now and receive a 60-day risk-free trial along with two free extras and free shipping. Call 800-393-6139. That's 1-800-393-6139.
Think green.
Harrison with you. Discovery is highlighting the Rodale Institute's research showing organic agriculture can actually remove 7,000 pounds of carbon dioxide from the atmosphere per acre every year. CO2 heating up the atmosphere is the culprit behind the larger problem of global warming. Organic farming uses less water to help crops grow because organic crops don't contain genetically modified genes, which require more water and food to grow. In fact, organic crops are in many ways drought resistant. The reason is chemical fertilizer is like a water sponge, in that plants drink it up every time they're thirsty for water. As long as water is plentiful, they grow just fine, but as soon as water gets scarce, the salt in the chemically fed plants no longer is diluted, reaching toxic concentrations, and the plant stops growing. Tomorrow, weeds and healthier vegetables. From the Greeniverse.
Think green with Harrison at GoHarrison.com.